25 minutes dinner. 25 minutes dinner, which is very fast, very slow.
For this first of three evenings, and I will do so in Dutch. Goedenavond, welkom op deze eerste avond van Talk of the Town, waarbij drie directeuren tevens programmeurs van drie min of meer bekende internationale kunsttheatra komen vertellen over hun activiteiten. Achtereenvolgens Jérôme Sans, directeur, samen met Nicolas Bourriaud van het Palais de Tokyo in Parijs. Volgende week dinsdag 19 november Lynn Cook, curator van de Dia Arts Foundation in New York. En dinsdag 26 november komt Charles Ash, directeur van het Roseum in Malmö. Een stad in Zweden die sinds de brug er ligt, nog maar 20 minuten van Kopenhagen ligt. Kopenhagen ligt dus de talk of what town, zou je kunnen afvragen. Maar in ieder geval heeft hij daar, ook hij daar, veel veranderd in de situatie. Waarom doen we dit? Om de noodzakelijke feitelijke informatie te verschaffen over concepten en formules die de laatste tijd mede door de discussie rond het Stedelijk Museum in debatten en krantenkolommen verschijnen. Omdat wij vaak een makkelijk en direct contact hebben met onze collega's en ook zelf benieuwd zijn naar hun ervaringen, willen wij onszelf en u graag laten inspireren. Sommige van deze instellingen zijn van recente datum, andere functioneren al langer, maar steeds zijn zij spraakmakend. De formule van de avonden is als volgt. Eerst presenteert de persoon in kwestie zijn of haar instelling. Daarna komen er steeds twee kenners vanuit verschillende achtergronden aan het woord. En stellen elk 10 minuten lang vragen aan de spreker. Een beetje een televisieachtig formaat zonder samenvattingen, want daar schatten wij u te hoog voor in. De vraagstellers van vanavond, maar hopelijk hoort u er zelf ook toe, zijn achtereenvolgens Nina Volkersma, redacteur van Metropolis M, oud-student van ons curatorial program en iemand die heel binnenkort haar eigen ruimte begint in Amsterdam. En de tweede ondervrager is Maria Lavajova, directeur van BAK, het voormalig kunstcentrum De Begane Grond, die onlangs zelf een vergelijkbare serie lezingen heeft georganiseerd in Utrecht. Vanavond dus de eerste presentatie van het Palais de Tokyo in Parijs, dat open is sinds januari dit jaar en in haar korte geschiedenis een enorme hoop stof heeft doen opwaaien. Zoals u velen van u al weten, bevindt het zich tegenover het Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris aan de Avenue du Président Wilson in Parijs, op een plek waar zich vroeger een Musée du Cinéma bevond, waar niemand zich meer heel veel van herinnert. Dit nieuwe instituut, dat tot 12 uur 's nachts open is, beschreef Lucetta Borg laatst in een special in Vrij Nederland met de sleutelwoorden flexibiliteit, vrijheid en ontmuring. Een Duitse kunstkrant, hij ligt daar, vroeg zich af of het instituut een researchplek, een Forschungsstätte is of meer een eventpalast. En Jérôme Sans zei zelf in Metropolis M, het is een manifest dat de komende 3 jaren zal worden uitgewerkt. Het is meer dan een expositie, het is de hele plek waar kunstenaars hun gang kunnen gaan, zowel buiten als binnen bij ons op kantoor. Ik wou het woord nu geven aan Jérôme Sans, maar hij heeft even net de lastige vraag gesteld of ik hem de eerste vraag wil stellen. En dat is dan automatisch, the first question is, why did you come to Amsterdam?
That's a very good question. Very simple to answer, because you invited me, Saskia, to come here and knowing you for almost 2 decades... I couldn't resist to the charm of your invitation. It was my youth, it was my roots, it was where I was learning everything on the road 20 years ago when I was still independent, starting as a young critic like most of you here at the course here. There were no courses at that time, I'm sorry to play an old man, but there were nothing besides the real experiences. And I am, like most of my homologues, most of people I respect, I learn everything from the artist, like Harald Zeman keeps saying. And I learn everything in traveling and going to studios of artists without knowing them, just ringing to their bells and saying, I like your work and I would love to stay in a corner to understand the way you work, to understand who you are, to understand what contemporary art is about. It's the way I met Mario Merz, it's the way I met Joseph Kosuth, Daniel Buren, and many other international artists since 20 years ago. But I will not speak about myself, it would be a bit quite boring for you and for me especially, but more about the experience I'm building in Paris, where I mostly never did any projects in the last 20 years, once every 5 years, and mostly really almost invisible things, very underground, because I am in a country where if you want to have a position in this world, you have to be part of a corporation, and I and Nicolas were never part of this corporation. We never had any diploma, we never belonged to any schools. We are just pirates and just do what we want and say clearly what we want to say. So there were never any possibilities for any of us, and this is the first time in our history, which is an enormous revolution. Maybe for you it doesn't mean anything, for us it was an enormous revolution, that at the end people like us could end up to be directors of a very important institution in Paris. And especially, normally when you inherit of an institution, what do you get? You get a staff, which is already there. You get a place, which is already existing. You get a budget, which is already existing too. And you have to fight with the architecture, with the staff, and mostly with all your story. We had the chance, for once, for very few people in our world, to build up a place with all our desires, all our concepts, all the things we are keeping listening for the last 20 years by most of directors of contemporary art centers or museums complaining about their places. We were tired to hear these complaints. We were tired to hear people becoming older than us. And we were thinking it would be time to jump on stage and to make something ourselves and to see if institutions was locked, as everybody seems to be, internationally wise. We were surprised, for example, that we are at a time where supposedly we are all having a precise position, but we don't smell this position in most of the institutions where we see internationally wise. We always see the same way of working, same way of communicating, same way of showing, same way of discussing, same way of introducing art to the audience. So we wanted to really try something and see if all the logic used by most of 99.99% of institutions used were still relevant. So the first thing we did, and we find it very surprising, that from Asia to Latin America, from United States to Europe, all the institutions are open at working hours, especially when mostly all of them are complaining of the lack of audience, complaining of or trying to fight to open the doors to new communities, new people. But how can you have more audience when we are open at working hours? Myself, I'm the worst visitor of exhibition in Paris because most of the exhibitions I should go or galleries are open when I'm working. When I leave my office around 9 o'clock at night every day, everything is closed. So I missed almost everything which is going on in Paris. So we find it very surprising that we are the only territory in culture which is not functioning like the others. Imagine cinemas, theaters, operas open just from 10 in the morning to 6 o'clock. It would be the ruin of the Hollywood industry. It would be the ruin of the record company's industry. It would be the ruins of the production house for operas. Why art should be always outside of everything? Why should be that pretentious to think that because of we are the best, people would run to us from 10 to 6 a day? It's impossible. So we decided to make a very simple but very radical gesture for us to join the leisure time, to help our friends, to help people who are working, and who should be our friends, our neighbors, to watch exhibition, to accompany us in our history. And at the start, everybody thought in Paris we were very pretentious, which we are. But at the end, the result is amazing. We are open for less than 8 months, and we joined already more than 200,000 visitors. We have every day at this moment more than 600 people. On weekend, as I just said to you on the left, we have 1,800 people on Saturday and Sunday. So for us, even though in Paris people criticize us a lot, We are very proud that at the end we did a place for contemporary art which is really inhabited. We didn't do something which is a ghost house with just always the same crowd, the same people, very insane, but really a place where people can just hang out, a live place, a place to live, a place which is not just a box with exhibition, but a house, a place where people feel comfortable and don't want to leave after watching or seeing the exhibition or listening to a talk or whatever. We understood that people, when they come to our place, they stay at least between 1 hour to 3 hours. So it's quite a lot, and they come a lot back and back. So we from the start, we were fighting against this idea of just an exhibition place. We are not interested to add another one in Paris, but make a gesture where all of a sudden it will be more like a human scale. Even if we are very big, we wanted to have this kind of human nature inside, a human attitude, and not hiding ourselves, you know, in the backstage, which where mostly in big institutions you never meet the directors, you never meet the curators. We are mostly all the time in the rooms, always ready to meet people if there is a crisis or if there is anything. We are always on stage, on the deck, with everyone. And we decided not to have any guards in Paris. In most of places for art, you have guards, which are people who are just telling you, like police people, don't touch, don't go on, please leave the room. So just very interesting things. We decided to have just young people in the rooms, young historians, young critics, young artists, to be mediators, to be people who are, when there is any questions from the desk at the entrance to the rooms, there is always people to talk to you, always person to engage a dialogue. We wanted to build up not a box for exhibition again, but a platform for an open dialogue, a dialogue with no end, a dialogue with no answer, a place where all the questions will be raised with no problem, with no taboo, with no limit. That's the reason why we decided not to make again another place where we just talk about visual arts, but bringing back the social, bringing back the political part of it. We found it very suspicious that for the last 20 years art has divorced somehow within the institution with the political dialogue. Like we had, if you do remember, in last April, for example, a very big crisis in my country with a man called Le Pen coming to the election and give us a very big frisson in the back. We decided the day where the percentage were so high that we do a big meeting, an open one, political one, in our place. And we send an email to everyone, and on a Friday night, and on Monday we did the meeting, and we had 2,000 people coming to the house to dialogue with us. Not just people from the art world, but politicians came from the mayor, from the mayor, from the ministry, from many other sources came and talked with us directly with the crowd. And it was very positive to see that at the end we are becoming again an agora and not just an entertainment place for formal or visual things, which we find very limited and not enough for the art. So we want to be back on the track of resistance, back on the track of dialogue, back on the track with real positions. Because for us, having a place starts, or like being a curator, is not just making an exhibition, this is just an exercise, but first having a position and having a clear one and really go on, not just for yourself, not to add any egotistic line on your resume, but to really build up a story with the artist, a story with the art, a story with the cultural debates. We found very weak the debates nowadays in the art, very insane, very uninteresting, very boring, just name-dropping, just about careers and about a market, very boring, no more attitude. So we are obsessed with this attitude of bringing back the voice of the artist, bringing back the social and the political debate at the front stage and not hidden behind the bookshelves. So we decided from the start to make a platform of the dialogue, again, an open dialogue. That's why we were not alone. I was not myself being a director. I stopped working alone 7 years ago, deciding I was very tired of myself, tired of working on the loop, but I wanted to put myself in a permanent danger, like in a couple, in an everyday situation of a couple where you have to deal with the everyday, deal with the danger of your limit, the danger of being bored all the time. So you have to share and to give, because for me, art is not about taking, but more or less about sharing. So we decided to build up a place not alone, but with two personas. Two different persons who never worked before together. Nicolas and myself never were friends before. We are never working in any project together. But we decided at the point, not in a very, not in a, we are not, I won't find the English word, but we decided that we were tired of waiting in our country, tired of waiting the other generation to move on, tired to always seeing the same musical chair game. So we decided to start ourselves. And when we decided to start this project, nothing was given to us by the Ministry of Culture. We started to look for a place, look for the budget. And when the ministry heard about our project, they asked us if we wanted to be part of this competition. And we said yes, if they were accepting our couple somehow project, our two heads project. And not to be sure that because of our two forces we would kill the others, but because we found it as a metaphor of handing a position in France, which is, you don't know, maybe Paris or France, but it's a very critical background. So you exist for 1 minute and you're killed the minute afterwards when you leave the room. So we wanted to make a place where at the end we would have two different persons in front of each other developing something together and inviting other people to join the platform to enlarge the debate. So for us it was really like a statement to be two persons, especially Nicolas and myself, two different independent working for many years in developing different projects, and mostly abroad and not in our country. So we wanted to develop this form, this duo form, which is very difficult, of course, like a couple again, like living every day is not easy. We have sometimes crisis, it's normal. We have sometimes happiness, sometimes we have disaster, it's normal. It's part of the whole thing, but we wanted to leave the whole project together from stage zero, from where we had just a white page, to the end. So we have 3 years of programming together, and we decided to work somehow not in a pyramid way with our staff, but in a very very dialogue situation. So even our administrator is part of all the discussion we have about the program, about the philosophy, about the legitimacy of inviting anyone or anything. So all our staff is a permanent discussion situation. So we wanted to make it not a utopian situation, because it works. It makes 8 months we are existing and we open the place. But it works in a very interesting way that everyone has a part, everyone can be curator. We are tired to see this virus of curators as well internationally wise. So we want to show that anyone can be a curator nowadays. There is no limit beside having a position. So even our technical director is curating shows in our place since the beginning. So there is no limit. I'm not signing everything. I'm not interested to sign everything. I don't care about this. I don't need this anymore. We are sometimes, Nicolas or myself, signing things when we have really something to say, when we have precise reactions to situations, so we are signing something. But otherwise, we share with the others, and we prefer that the others do it, even though we are behind every project and we follow everything. So what we wanted to do from the start is really make a place where, at the end, we will not hear anymore, you know, always same references to open the windows to the outside. If you remember all this quotation for the last 20 years, everybody complaining and crying about this and looking outside and no more just inside the art world, leaving the walls and going to the streets. So we decided to make it at the end. We don't know if it's a success or a failure. We don't care. Our idea was to make a place of an experience, a permanent experience, from the first day to the end. And we'll go to the end, whatever happens. But for us, this is the interest to be in the art and not just repeat what other people has done or what we think is the best alone, but really to each time reactivate the idea of an experiment. We want to be a permanent laboratory of experiences and not just a concept of it. And we thought at the start maybe it would be very difficult for the artist or for the audience to understand or to play with it. And we found this is exactly the opposite. For example, you don't know the place, but the place, maybe for some of you, have not been in Paris. So this is the outside, very austere. As you may know, this is a structure from the 30s. The building or the site was built for the Universal Exhibition. This is the outside at night. The neighborhood was a very boring one before we came. The street, you never saw anyone walking down the street anymore. No lights in the street, no life, nothing. So we decided to use the windows as a light box to reactivate the street itself, the neighborhood. And now, of course, you have all these people, these pictures by Bert Trolley, who are inhabiting the building. So from the outside, it's it's a light box, and from the inside, during the day, they look at you. Inside is like this, very rough. When we came, the building was before us. The last big project by Jack Lang was to make a museum of cinema inside the house. So they destroyed all the fake ceiling, all the fake walls, everything. They spent more than 10 million of euros to destroy the house. But when they destroyed everything, they discovered it was a building made for light. So making a cinema on 4 different floors and rebuilding walls was a complete paradox. So this construction stopped, and it became a ghost house for many years. Many years was not used. There were just pigeons in the house, and 20,000 square meters not used in front of the Museum of Modern Art. And in 1998, the Ministry of Culture, Catherine Trottmann, decided to use it as a temporary place for contemporary art, and to make a competition inside it. And so we inherited the place and didn't change the structure because we didn't have the budget, but we decided to use it the way it was and to start it directly from the first day as if we were inheriting a place from a family, like a house in the countryside, but we don't have the money to restore it or to fix it. But we decided to live in it anyhow and to make the constructions very slowly in a very natural way and not to open it in a fixed way and not to give all the receipts in the first minute. We decided to make it in a natural rhythm. So this is, you are facing the restaurant, for example, where it's just host table. The rooms were not divided into different boxes. We first decided to show art, no more in small ghettos where everybody would be on their own, living on their island, but to put every artist in a dialogue with the others, to oblige everyone to join in the house, when they join in the house, to be in this dialogue situation. And we were surprised to see the reaction of most of the artists. We were first thinking maybe they will reject this thing, thinking the best is always to have the white cube system and to have to live on their own, on their own planet. But most of them, 99%, worked and played this idea with us and decided it would be very interesting to check, to see what could be done there. And even though at this moment we have, I had an interesting question earlier. Someone in the house here asked me why do we have now older people, because we are supposed to be a prospective place. Our goal is to show what's going on in a global perspective. But we were keeping saying from the start, we will never be a place of a generation. It doesn't mean anything. We are not coming from nowhere. We will not go in a known place. We are coming. We have roots. We have history. And we will be a place for experiment again. So whoever comes to the house, they have to play the game of experimentation. So we have right now, for example, Louise Bourgeois, a very young artist of 92 years old, who came to us. We didn't go to her. She came to us directly and asked if she could do something very experimental. And we asked what was it. And she wanted to make a sound installation and a video installation. So we were very excited to make with her a try, a test, something she would be never invited in any big institution where she would be invited. So she did a very beautiful sound installation where she's singing herself lullabies from her youth, which is playing like a ping pong from different walls. And the other one is she's welcoming people by the entrance of the rooms, exhibition rooms, and she's asking questions about life, about love, about art, about death. So we found it very challenging, very interesting, and we are keeping combining artists of different generations, artists from different cultures, artists from different worlds, artists from different vocabularies in a permanent open dialogue inside the house. We found it very stupid to ghettoize young artists, to ghettoize old artists or mid-career artists or whatever. Art has no age, especially experimentation things. It's too early for questions. I'm sorry. You have to wait for a few minutes. So the idea of the place is really this idea of permanent experimentation with artists. So the first steps of the house was like this. We kept everything as it was because two-thirds of the budget of we got from the ministry to fix the house went to the structure itself, the floors, the ceilings, the lighting, the heating, and things like this. People thought at the start we were romantic or we were playing with the places or even we were destroying the place. They completely misunderstood what we did. By the entrance, we decided to put the only wall, in fact, we have, is this wall. We give each time to an artist for quite a long period, 6 months, as a generic of our program. And the first one was done by a very interesting artist, Navin Ravanchakul, where he was talking about the art world crash, internationally wise, of the institution. And of course, us on the side, very proud. We are coming into the future. This is a slide of it's a new bar we have now, which is kind of a very Taiwanese bar, which is working like the rest from noon to midnight every day. But just the floor, we have very small table. This is what we called le salon. It was initiated by Meshach Gaba. It's a place we are tired of the benches of the museum and tired of these fake convivial places in institutions. We decided to ask for a long period as well, 6 months to artists, to conceive a salon. So the first one was Meshach Gaba, who made this fantastic project where you could play piano, you could play on a game invented on a computer. You could do a chess game. He did as well. You could have a drink. You could listen to music, African music, and things like this. So it was for the last 6 months. It was very popular. This is another line we have, which is called Tokyo Games. It's games made by artists. It can be video games. It can be whatever. But each month we invite an artist with a project of a game. And we show it in the Pied Tokyo. It was one of the most famous pieces at the start, made by this Japanese artist, Junie Yamaide. He did the coloriage. It's a white paper for children where you have to fill with color. I saw the project in Tokyo, which was very, very nicely, very gently filled with color in a very polite way. In Paris, people were really like wild, and of course never followed the drawing. Had so many layers of color that at the end you couldn't see anything from the original drawing. And the last thing they were doing, they were using their keys to make drawings inside the enormous layers of colors to put it. And we had to hide on the side all the crayons, because people were really like starting to draw all over the walls, thinking we were the more free place in the world, so they could be all artists and become themselves a drawer. This is another Thai artist, Surazik Uzewong, and we did this very big project with him. He makes market each time. It's another way for us to talk about this idea of generosity and to be simple. He's making this, he's kind of making a joke on the art market where always things are, the prices are growing. Yeah, every object were for €1. We had thousands of objects, thousands for the opening, and people, he started to make a performance, making music and speaking loud, like in a market, in a street market. And people, of course, bought the objects, and after an hour, you got two objects for the price of one, then three for the price of one. It became a real craziness, and now these objects are all over Paris for €1. So this is a salon for another of you. What about the one? Ah, yes, this is it looks like umbrellas. In fact, it's umbrellas for sounds, because it was, we decided to make a place where you could chill out and listen to music specially made for us by electronic musicians or by artists. It's called Tokyo Lab, Audio Lab, and it was designed by two French designers, Les Frères Bourrelec. And so afterwards there were some chairs, and of course people could stay for between 5 minutes to an hour to just hear to this shadow, this rain of music above your head. This is a performance by Paola Pivi. Piece by Kea Sam, which was like transforming the house into like a street of Johannesburg. This is Mélie Coignan, first exhibition he did with us. This is another place where we found it very, very important for us to have. By the entrance, we offer a booth, kind of a booth or a place, a room, to either a young publishing house, a collective of artists. We have right now a record label called FCOM for a month, where they can do whatever they want. They have 1 month of program to propose, where everybody every day has to be reactivated with something. And so it's given to anyone who have an interesting project for us. So it's a free zone of expression. This is the room you saw earlier transformed since we had Wolfgang Tillmans. People thought we would never had any white walls. We, as I said earlier, we started from the day zero to build the house and to clean the house somehow. It doesn't mean that in 3 years we'll be completely white. Of course not. We are resisting to this obsession. But the room now is becoming a very beautiful place by Tobias Treberger right now, where the show exists just after 5 o'clock when the sun is going down. Every day, of course, it changes, and the audience can't come before it is dark outside. And it's a show called Night Shift, which is about this. It's a kind of a product of experience of time in the house. I go very fast because I'm not very interested to see many shows with slides. It's a show by a young Japanese artist living in Berlin, Hanayo. It's her first institution show. We are very much interested in showing people like this. We are on the merge of visual arts and other fields. She is a musician and a photographer. We had recently, you will see, Ed Templeton. It's a very famous skateboarder from Los Angeles, who is as well an artist. And we want to show this artist who are playing with different worlds. This is a piece by Boris Achour. It's a videotech. This is Ed Templeton, this skateboarder. We had this big demo in the house where he invited 10 other friends from Los Angeles to make a demo in a big room. And we had 4,000 teenagers came just for this because they are very famous in their world. And they made a fantastic event one day of skateboarding in the house. You, surrounding the museum, there is a lot of skateboarders, but all the neighborhood tried to reject them for 10 years. And we wanted to make a gesture to show them we are not against, but we are more or less with them. So this is some example. It's kind of a diary of his everyday, of his traveling internationally wise. This is FCOM. This is it's one of the major label record company in Paris. FCOM, initiated by Laurent Garnier, very famous DJ. And they invented with us and for us this FCOM truck, which is kind of DALI boxes where you can open everything and something is going on. There is a video, there is music, there is a different thing, and you can play with it. And we had, for the monsters, many events with many DJs and musicians. We made and didn't do any set, but they made special things they never did before. For example, Laurent Garnier came and made a special thing for us. He played like at home, played his favorite records without playing electronic, but other things. And all the others came and made like live things with no electro things. So it was like unplugged stuff. So just experimental things. We are not playing the game of being a club because we hate this idea of institutions playing the game of being a bar or being a club or being a restaurant without having the rules or without having the vocabulary or the thing. We always keep saying in Paris we are before and the after is made outside in other places. This is a show of a very young French artist called Laurent Morisseau. Where this was the only show where we blocked the room with the wall because his work doesn't exist if the light comes in. Because he's working with photographic paper and collaborates with fashion designers this time to make some accessories or some clothing. And he's showing it like this, like in this lab situation. So this was the only reason we wanted to build up a wall and to close the room. This is Marianne Marshall, last video, which is shown with an open wall to the other show, so you can see from Louise Bourgeois, from other shows, her video. And the last slide for me, which is kind of a slogan of the place, is this one, this piece from Monica Bombicini, Add Elegance to Poverty. Or something else I want to add is, if we want to keep the place under construction, this is the obsession of not finalizing the place, but always keeping the place like a scaffolding, always on scaffolding. This is very important for us. So something very important for us was to change somehow the economy of an art institution in Paris, because most of our the other places in France are state money, city or region, and we found it very not sane nowadays to do this, so we decided to try to have an economy which is mixed, half sponsors, half partners, and half the state. And everybody thought we would be a disaster, and for the first year we succeeded to find the economy for this. We don't know for the future, but we found it for the first year, and we are fighting for this to try to change this very strange, insane economy always run by political things, and we want to keep our freedom concerning the budget as well, and we were fighting to have this balance to be sure that we will keep our freedom to the end. Well, are you still alive? Can we have some light? Because I'm going to sleep in a second if I'm just talk alone in the dark. What can I tell you? What else? Because I know so much the place. The problem is I normally never do this kind of speech alone. I prefer dialogue. I prefer confrontation. So now my friend Nina will join me to talk and ask precise and very concrete questions.
I'm going to ask you very personal questions. You said that it would be boring to talk about you personally, but that's what I would like to do. Instead of focusing just on the Palais de Tokyo, and we only have 10 minutes, but you can talk very fast, so that's okay. You started in the 80s, 1982. Could you tell us something about the art scene in France in the 80s?
It was a disaster. I don't know why the sound changes. When I started, nothing was possible for my generation. There were no room for any magazines. There were no room for any places. So if you wanted to do something, you had to invent completely your reality. So you couldn't complain because there was nothing else, nothing possible. So.
But what triggered your interest? What triggered your interest in that?
Yeah, of course, I remember everything. It was yesterday. Yes, I come from a musical background. In fact, I was a teenager in a classical band on one hand, and on a rock band in the other hand. And in both sides, it was impossible. With rock, I look too much as a wealthy boy and then a classical man, because I was like a priest working with classical people in a very famous classical band. And with the classical people, they thought I was a jerk, total joke, because I was playing rock music, which was impossible. So I had my ass in between two chairs. And I understood at that point I would never be an artist, because I saw around myself so many artists when I was 13, 14, 15. People were like my age now, 50 or 60 years old, very sad on the side, you know, playing on a one concert hall in London or in Paris or in Europe somewhere with me. And they were playing three notes. They were thinking they were heroes. It was so sad. And I was making my money when I was a bit older in movie as well. I was an extra in different films, feature films in Paris, in France, and working with many filmmakers to make it. No, extra. It's like the guys walking on behind, the guy serving you a drink, the man who never speaks, the person who never speaks, the shadows in films. So I was as well, you know, meeting so many poor people, you know, thinking when they are like 3 seconds on the camera in a film, they were like heroes. I was tired of this, and my best friends at that time, we were spending all our nights in reading art books. We are reading Giotto, Masaccio, Rembrandt until 5 o'clock in the morning, smoking joints. When our friends were like laying down like peanuts, we were talking and dialoguing.
About Giotto?
Yeah, absolutely. About modernity and things like this. And at the age of 18, my friends went to visual art school, and I decided not to do this. And I came to the history university, and I left after 2 years, bored again, as usual with me. And I left in a very mythical way. I was reading Art Forum at that time, an article on Arte Povera. It was a huge amphitheater, and everybody was laughing, which was never happening in the courses. And my teacher was in my back, and she asked me, if you find it more interesting, could you jump on stage and explain to your friend why and what are you reading? I said, with pleasure. I came on stage and explained to my friend why I was reading Art Forum and not listening to these old ladies talking for 2 years about Van Gogh sleeping in his room and everything, what he had in front of his windows and everything, and why Arte Povera was that important. I talked for 30 minutes. All my friends clapped me. I left the room thanking my teacher, saying to her, thank you very much, you teach me everything. I leave this university, it's really the end, this is boring, we waste our time here, I go on my way.
Sounds a bit arrogant, but you have heard this.
I was a wild boy, very arrogant, like a young dog, a bit crazy, and this is the way it started.
In his interview in Metropolis M, you stated that the practice of a curator is similar to the practice of a DJ, and I know that you are a DJ as well. I heard you perform in Gwangju, mm-hmm. South Korea. Tell us something about this, your experience of being a DJ and what this special kick is.
For me, it's exactly the same experience. It's exactly like being in front of you here. Once you're a curator, once you're a DJ, you end up to be behind someone in a lineup. Once you're a DJ and you come to the club, you play first, for example. You make the warm-up, I take after you. If I'm bad, I'm rejected in a second. In a real club, not in an artist situation, in a real club where I play, you're already after 10 minutes, out. The crowd can stand your music, you're out. You have to be challenging, smart, and writing. DJing is writing with songs. It's like exactly like curating. If there is not a scenario with your shows, there is nothing. There is just a few things on the wall, it's nice, it's a boost, but there is nothing special. Curating is the same for me. It's the same story. White Cube, I often say that White Cube is the same like a white club somehow. Mm-hmm. It's the same story, same danger. I put myself in a risk of failing. Mm-hmm. And you know, a record, it goes very fast. If you play with a maxi, it's 5 minutes. You lose the next one afterwards. Everybody hear it, so it's direct.
But normally, as a curator, you don't really receive the reactions of the audience immediately. And is that also why your program for the Ballet de Tokyo is very open, is very flexible, and you need all those people in, and you want to stay on deck, on the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Since the beginning, the first shows I did myself alone were really like this reaction with people. I have an example in mind. I did a project when this French director of the Venice Biennale refuses to have aperto. A few years ago, if you don't remember, I decided with a few friends that I would take a boat, come to Venice, which is normally impossible to do, have a boat facing Arsenale. It was a Trabacolo, a very normal boat for Venice, not something like from, not a James Bond boat, but something very normal for Venezia. And invited 40 international artists to come with me and to make a special pieces for the boat. And we received all the audience for the week of the opening. Everyone, as I was the captain of the boat with all the other artists on deck and make the tour of the exhibition. I became like the guide, the concierge, the curator, the cleaner, and everything. For me, a role of curator doesn't start with the idea and ends on the wall. It's all the responsibility you have around. So for me, it has always been like this. If I create a show, there is always this engagement of myself. Otherwise, I'm not interested. Anyone else can make it, and it's not interesting for me. When I did the Taipei Biennale as well in Taiwan, that was the same engagement for me to try to bring to that city, which were like very isolated and not the first one in the international map, to try to give all my experiences, all my energy, all my culture to everyone. And my life was not just to work in the office, it was as well in the nightlife with everyone over there, bringing everyone in different places, bars, clubs, restaurants, and try to open everything to everyone. You know, so for me, curating is not just on my desk, it's the life.
But
experience.
There's the danger that it is just a short-term commitment. Like, DJs are becoming the new superstars. They travel all over the world, they have their suitcase full of records, and they perform for just one night and then leave again. And you could say the same thing for these international airport curators.
Yes, but I created my own airport somehow, you know?
And your airport is
Paris. No, it's Paris. It's by Tokyo. You know, of course, I was like this for many years. I'm still traveling a lot. Mm-hmm. But having a place is effectively completely different than just going, making something, and leaving the day after the opening and saying, bye-bye, thank you very much, it was nice, we had a very good time. Congratulations for your thing and everything. Having a place every day like Saskia is doing here, it's another commitment. It looks very easy to do, but it's a real thing to mm-hmm. keep it rolling, to keep it fresh, to keep it existing. It's like your own house. You know, if you don't put all your energy, it dies, it dries very fast, super fast. So it's especially when you're directing, you have a staff to keep the energy, to keep the passion, to keep the whole thing in it. We are very small, even though we are 30 in total staff. We should be 60, to be honest with you. So all my staff is working twice as much as they should do. I work, of course, day and night. This is not the problem, but we have to have this thing. And for me, again, life, I consider my staff as my family somehow. Mm-hmm. So Paetoku became my new house.
But still, it's a coming and going. It's changing exhibitions every 6 months or every 2 months.
Yes, but I keep saying since the start, because many people told me, how would you stand to sit on a chair for 3 years, which is effectively, if you know me, quite difficult to do.
But I
consider this project as, for the first time in my life, the chance to make a ephemeral project which lasts 3 years. Normally what I do is like flirting. Mm-hmm. It's nice, but it's very like somehow you don't have really the benefit for yourself, you know, in your soul, in your personal experience. Mm-hmm. Everything is keep leaving, losing. You lose it all the time. You make something which disappears all the time. Here, at the end, I can come back 2 days after, it's still here, you know. So it's fantastic.
A steady relationship, but you're not prepared to get married with a collection. Could you imagine that, if you would have a budget to collect works, what works or artists would you purchase for a collection? Or are you not?
First, I would not do a collection in France, for example.
Why not?
Because we have already so many, well, we have first the FNAC, which is the National Fund for Contemporary Art, which is very big, and they buy for more than 2.5 million euros a year. So where can you find a collector or anyone who give you more than that? It's impossible, and they have collected for 20 years, so it's impossible to make better. Then we have all the FRAC, no way, forget it. We have the Pompidou, which is a fantastic collection. It would be ridiculous to make it, no way. My country, no way. Somewhere else, yes. Somewhere else, like, I don't know, Asia or Latin America or somewhere else.
Rotterdam?
I don't know.
We need a new director.
No, no. I'm not ready.
You're not ready?
No, it's too early. I have 2 more years, then maybe.
I still have a lot of other questions, but I think I should give the word to Maria now, and I'll come back.
Please.
I can't sit so close to you.
Why? Are you afraid? Are you afraid?
I'm going to try to bring the discussion back to Palais de Tokyo.
Good.
And I studied quite a lot without you maybe knowing it, but I'm kind of reconstructing the art institution, transforming the artist initiative into what we call professional art institute. Mm-hmm. And in many respects, Palais de Tokyo was the example to look at. And
something is going on. I'm waiting for the
Well, it's coming. Wait, it's coming. I thought it was a perfectly designed, well thought, and precisely constructed conceptual work of art. Palais
there
de Tokyo.
But. I'm waiting for the but.
No, I didn't find out where to continue after that but and comma. I want to ask you, what's the weak spot of Palais de Tokyo? Where is it that it does not work?
There is many weak parts, to be honest with you, and we. if I have to find one right now, it's the weak part is the time. The time for us to make a point, a serious point, and not being glued in a so-called success or whatever, which we find very stupid and ridiculous. And no, the weak point is the time for us. Really, the time to think, rethink what we do all the time, and not be stressed or being pushed to do more, just to do more, and to do worse, because it's very easy to make more spectacle like this, mm-hmm. just to make spectacle. So the weak point is we have to become resistant of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. But somehow it's fast. Your own decision.
Of course, yes, but you know.
The logic of time or economy of time you chose, it's extremely accelerated, the rhythm of the institution. It is your own choice.
I know, but you know, at the same time, we thought of this, of reducing the rhythm of all this turnover of events, then we thought we would be back to our neighbors. A show every 4 months, I'm sleeping in a corner. So if it starts this, I will live 2 months abroad, building up for the project, and I come like 3 weeks before the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to be very bored. I need for my life, I need for my everyday to be always shaken.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing that we all somehow claim all the time, that we open, and that's a little bit problematic term, and that's maybe where we can look at a little bit, because there's this notion of hospitality in the series Saskia mentioned. We discussed the notion of hospitality a lot. What it is to be hospitable space, and we looked at Derrida's writing and thought about this immense inclusiveness. Let us say yes to everybody who appears at our doors. But I feel that you're hospitable towards your audience. You did everything for your audience,
mm-hmm.
but you're not hospitable towards your artists.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain. You as an institution and you personally as a curator or curators are gatekeepers. You are the ones who select the artist. Is there a way how to connect being hospitable to your audience, to your public, and at the same time hospitable to your artist?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure to follow you really. But, well, I would not say that. Of course, I'm not sure to specify your point, but we try to, as I said earlier, maybe the weak point is our desire from the start was to focus everything on the artist's voice again, and try to give as much attention to the artist themselves and not to the place, not to us, as much as possible. And if there is a weak point, maybe this is the one. Like we decided, we had many ideas at the start. We discussed with the artist, but we didn't produce yet. But this is something we will do for 2003 with many of them. Like, we wanted to make just very simple example. For example, we decided to make for each artist project inviting their friends. For example, you're an artist, and for you, your environment, your permanent environment is a dancer with who you have exactly the same ideas, a writer, a filmmaker. And each time the idea was to invite the world of the artist. And to put, for example, in the bookshop, your writing, what you have on your bookshelf right now, what's for you, the architecture of your souls. So the weak point is, for the rhythm of these shows, to have forgotten somehow this kind of seeds we had at the start, but we, by the lack of time, by too much activity, by too much stress, too much craziness, we didn't pay attention that it disappeared like sugar in the water very fast. So we will do it again in 2003. For each project, we will start to do this again. More talks, more presence of the artist on stage, and discussion, and even criticizing ourselves and things like this. So we will do this again, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, again, and this is where the first experience in my life where you have to work every day in a place where you can think very fast. This is a weak part of it. Mm. Very, very fast. And we understood it after 6 months. We didn't see anything from the first month to the 6 months. 6 months we understood we were like out of order, we were out of the blue, becoming to live on another planet, but not on reality. And we decided to talk with our friends and try to criticize ourselves in many spots. We didn't succeed yet in making it clear, but we understand that there is a danger for all of us, all directors of all institutions internationally, that if you don't pay attention, you become, like everyone else, a pure fonctionnaire and a pure boring curator, a pure boring place, and everything is gone.
That's where we all end.
Yeah, yeah, but it's very dangerous. It goes faster when you run a place. It's amazing how fast it comes.
Over one year ago, you posed a question to me and to many other boring international curators that I want to throw back at you. What is the progressive art institution of the 21st century? And I don't want you to say Palais de Tokyo.
I didn't say that. No, we said when people ask us, why do you ask this question to the other, and you don't make a book yourself on it, we said our answer will be Palais de Tokyo. Of course, this is no more the case. It exists now. But I would say for me the institution, even though it's not the 21st century, for me it's a place where you invent yourself. It has to smell yourself. It has to live with your rhythm, with your thoughts, with your clothes, with everything. I hate when I go to a place to be like in a generic house, like in a hotel you find everywhere in the world. You know, I want to understand why. With the apple, it smells Saskia Boss. Why, you know, in a place in Tokyo, you know, in a museum, it plays someone, the director. For me, it's very important to understand where we come from. We often forget that the place doesn't exist without the people running it, like a magazine. A magazine doesn't exist if you don't have the editors. So, for me, it's this. And an institution should be always, of course, reinventing it. So the question for me now is, what will I do after Palais de Tokyo? What can I do after this? This is more the question.
And what can Palais de Tokyo do after you and Nicolas?
This is a big question at this moment, a political one. What can happen to the place afterwards? Mm-hmm. And we are trying to secure it for following round of 3 years for someone else behind, because our fear is, because we are so free in our attitude, in our way of talking, ministry will maybe become tired of people like us. So we'll close down the place or remove it, or maybe even worse, make like MoMA in PS1, make in Paris Pompidou and Palais Tokyo, because as you know, Pompidou is looking for so many years for a place for
bringing fresh air in.
You know, the risk is possible in Paris for this, so we are trying to fight to keep it as a platform of experience, like someone like you can come afterwards and put everything we did on the floor and say, this is completely wrong, my way of seeing
wide
the place
world.
Is it's open from 5 o'clock in the morning to 7, and we work like this. That's it.
It seems through your talk, I try to listen very carefully, that you base the construction of Palais de Tokyo on criticism of existing institutions.
No, that's probably
my interpretation. No. I heard you saying I hate that
because
it's closed at 6.
Yes, because I hate many things.
But isn't it true that you placed it on failures or mistakes of the other institutions? Did you try to identify those and work them out in another way?
The chance we had with Nicolas, we had many experiences in different places in the world, so we could compare some rules with the others and discuss everything, you know, like from why, for example, everybody's communicating the same in the art world. Why everybody's still using these invitation cards? Why are you putting that much money in sending cards to everyone? Stupid.
There are better ways of marketing.
We keep the money for the
artist.
You say we are not nice with the artist. We keep the money to produce work. We have 15,000 people on our list. if we had just 10,000 of, let's say that there is, if I made that every month for every show, it's crazy. The card, the stamp, it's meaningless. Nowadays, where we are at the time where it costs 0.02 cents to people, why are we not using the contemporary art, contemporary tools? Like every company, every record company use this. Everyone making, you know, promotion nowadays use that. Why are we still on an ancient model? Our question was, for every line of everyday work, we are thinking, is it right, is it wrong? What can we do? Mm-hmm. Let's think. So
what I was heading for was this question, if you build up a new something, a big thing, Palais de Tokyo, on the critique of the institution and often something that reminds of institutional critique, and if that something is an institution again, what happens next?
For me, the word institution is not bad. It had often in the mouth of my friends a bad
taste.
Mm-hmm. It smells bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. You know, it's like every word. You know, it depends who use it, who put the clothes on it. For me, for us, we are not afraid of being an institution. You know, institution is not something fixed. It's not because people have done something that the world is dead. Mm-hmm. We use it in another way. And there is still a lot of rooms to other possibilities. So our idea was much more to make a try and try to put a kick in the chess game to see what could happen. Mm-hmm. And to hope that other people would make other try, other experiment, other things.
I think my 10 minutes is always over, but the last thing, would you then agree with something I keep thinking of in these situations? It's a quote of by Boris Groys, who says, it's not artworks nowadays that produce history of art, it's art institutions that are capable of thinking in terms of becoming, not finalizing, not freezing themselves in final format.
Well, by chance, we have artists. By chance, I live with artists. If I was just living with institutions, I would be completely dry, like a dry food. So I would think completely the opposite. I don't live inside these places. They never made history. They will never do it. I'm sorry about that. Even though if we try new things, the artists keep the guys who order the games.
It's the artists.
Yeah, by chance.
Thank you so much for your brilliant short interviews, but I have the feeling that there are people in the audience who were even silenced in the beginning, who maybe
ready.
Want to get a chance at the microphone. To use it, please.
I had a question, but he replied it in along the line, so it's okay. Another question? No, because what I wanted to ask was that in the press, like in the French press, most of the way the Palais Tokyo is being defined is a young for young contemporary artists doing work and experimenting in this space, because in France what's been very difficult is that there haven't been spaces for very young artists or students that come out of school to be able to show their work. So they had spaces like Public or Glass Box or little alternative spaces. And so having a space like the Palais Tokyo was a way of the young students coming out of school feeling that they have a space they could show their work in and experiment in. And later when Jérôme Sans was talking about showing works of Rebecca Horn or Louise Bourgeois, in a way, when the younger generation also thinks about it, it's like, how come they're showing the works of this artist that we've seen for a long time in different spaces and they've had the opportunity to show their works in New York, London, anywhere they want to show. And so it was a way of also asking Jérôme how this is conceived in his space, in this space, been for young contemporary artists? Because in France also you had the Jeu de Paume, which was made for young artists, or before then the Centre Pompidou, which was made also in a way for young contemporary artists. And as time went on, they became like these frozen institutions, as he says. And so when we see this kind of way it's going, how do you feel about it in a way?
I feel very comfortable.
That's what he
says. To be honest with you. You know, again, you know, it's true that, you know, the French always try to find, you know, a hand on the floor, not to make a critique, so we find it very funny, but we are showing still every month a lot of young artists. We have shown in 8 months so many people who never had any visibility. The first one I show on my slide projection of Melico Agnan, when we decided to show this artist, no one in France and nowhere in the world wanted to show his work. And the day we decided to make a solo show with him, he found by a very funny coincidence a gallery in Paris. Then he had a show in 3 different places abroad. So each time we show a young artist, it has directly an effect, locally, internationally wise. So we know this from the first exhibition we had. We were so impressed by this enormous impact. Each time we show an artist, it has. We never stopped. You know, even when we show these guys from Bordeaux by itself, by the entrance, where every week they were showing a new piece, they sold all the works they have shown there, like this, in a minute, to big collectors. And they now have found many opportunities. So we are more afraid of the effect, to be honest with you now, we produce than the opposite. Because we know that each time we make something, people, you know, even our neighbors, you know, try to pick up before us, knowing, listening, because the art will work with rumors. So each time you call an artist, 10 minutes afterwards, everybody knows who, what's going on, okay? And funnily, 5 minutes afterwards, you call someone, your neighbors show it 2 months before you. Huh? Don't you find it as an effect? I find it as an effect, which is very positive for the artist. And it exists too. We, I think, created in Paris, again, a kick in a chess game where now people look more to the studios of young artists. They look more around. They are afraid to lose and to miss something, which was not the case before. They were thinking the world belonged to them and they could wait for 2 decades and something would happen. So it's no more the case. I think now there is a real stimulation in Paris. We will lose it maybe tomorrow. It will be someone else to have the thing. But who cares? We created now a new energy in Paris with other independent places you mentioned, Glassbox and others. I think it's completely another game. Completely another game. So for us, it's much more interesting to invite someone like you next to Frank Surti and to Rebecca Horn than just inviting you with your friends. What would be the result if you just invite artists of the same family always together? It doesn't make any effect for you. It's much more challenging for you, I think, to be invited next to Tillmans, Frank Surti, and maybe Louis Bourgeois.
There's a question here. Yes, I would like to know if you could advise us what we should advise to the city of Amsterdam, because you know we are having discussions about the modern art. So I would like to know in what sense your Topolé de Tokyo is typically French, or whether you think every city, you know, with the size of and the scale of Amsterdam should have a Palais de Tokyo-like type of space or institution or whatever you call it.
The first thing I want to tell you is, the first thing I would love to say to a politician is to let or to give all the possibilities and to give to let the art curators working the way they want and not bore them, not to put them any limits beside financial one, but to let them be as free as possible. The bigger problem we have, and all our colleagues internationally have, is this problem. You know, as far as you go, each time you're creative, they don't understand, so they become nervous. I think we should leave these people, who are professionals, working quietly and in the most, and push them to be as much creative as possible. But the problem with politicians is they are so scary and they scare so much the curator, so you become scared to scare, so you don't do anything at the end. So there is a time where if you feel confident with people, you can let you go, you can give a lot. If you feel stressed, you don't give anymore. So the first advice I give to politicians is to leave all the professionals you have, and you have a lot of very good professionals in the Netherlands. You can't complain. You have many people who have made international things here, who are visible internationally wise, who have been example for many decades. So I think you should be proud of this first, and then maybe give opportunities to one or two younger people who have never had any chance to do anything here, and to give them the possibility to make a project. But if you really look to the list of curators you have and you add in this country, you can't be sad.
Anybody else?
No, and just to finish with this idea of Paris-Tokyo, I think the worst for us would be to find a copy of it in other places. That place was invented for Paris for a specific reason, at a specific time, with a specific generation of people around, waiting, as Otto was saying, that something would happen at the end, always looking on the right, on the left, on the south and north, that something would happen. So that was done for a specific purpose. To just export it somewhere else would not work at all. Like everything, like every life, you know, it has to be specific to the scene, to the place, to the culture. So it couldn't go anywhere, I'm afraid. And we are very special as well, so cloning myself would be difficult.
I have a question. I was very curious to know if you consider it your task to reach a very new audience. I myself happened to be in Paris last weekend. I visited the Palais de Tokyo, and it was very busy there, very crowded, but with a very, you could say, white bourgeois audience, I must say. And I know that also the people in Paris, the whole structure is changing. A lot of people coming from other countries living there, but I didn't see them at the Palais de Tokyo. Do you consider it a task to reach them and have them visit the Palais?
It's a very good question, because we are all as well obsessed by this. But I would love to invite you for the Chinese New Year. You will see a Palais Tokyo crowd of hundreds and hundreds of Chinese people and Asiatic people in the house. But at the end, of course, I would agree with you. We are trying to fight for other audiences, other communities, not audiences, but other communities. We are not always the possibility to have access to art. But it's not an easy task. It's not an easy thing. In 8 months, you know, to reach this, it's very fast. Would be very good, would be God to succeed in 8 months. It's an art session, but it's very hard. It's very, very hard, because you have to... You have to spend a lot of energy, you have to have a lot of things for this, you have to have a lot of disponibility. This is maybe a weak part of the Palais Tokyo as well, is to have less time, less energy for this than we thought at the start. We try, for example, with Melico Agnon again. We did a slam session with real slammers from the suburb. We invited their friends in LA. So we do once in a while events. But of course, it's a very temporary presence of this audience. But if you came as well for this skateboard event, you would have been very surprised to see kids who have never been to any institution in Paris coming with us and telling to all of us, to myself, they were really happy to see they were accepted, they were understood at the end, that their culture was not just a joke, but a reality. So we do step by step, small events, small things like this, which are making now a bigger circles. But it's true that Paris is still a white power thing, I'm afraid, but it's true. This is why we decided, for example, to have in our own staff, for the first time in my country, an Asiatic curator. It sounds stupid, huh? But this is not. She was not from Paris. She was from Tokyo. But having this was an enormous political gesture. We never have in our television. If you watch French television, you will never see, for example, for the news, a black journalist or an Asiatic one. It's always white people. Our television is completely white. The whole thing is completely white. It's true. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. We do agree with you. But we can't say that our program is following this thing, because if you go through what we showed, without going into quotas, which I really hate if I'm stupid, we want to show the world the way it is, of course, and especially in Paris, where we have many different communities, many different worlds, many different things. But it's not that easy, because they never had any welcoming in any of other institutions in Paris, where they feel rejected, they feel nuts, they feel not at home. So it's a lot of work to do afterwards, you know, so it's not easy to do.
I also think, firstly, that audiences are never subscribers. I mean, they know exactly why they come for something, and they come for something, and they won't come for the next thing, because they choose, and they know what they come for. So they, in a way, they never subscribe. Is there anybody else who would like to put a question?
I have a remark. It's not so much a question, but something which came from my mind all the time. Are you familiar with the work from Ariane Mnuchin? Because she worked in Paris for a long time, and I'm all the time when you're telling your story how you developed the Palais de Tokyo, I have to think about her, because she started, what was it, 20, 25 years ago, mm-hmm. with enormous energy. She also, before starting her performances, she also went into the hallway herself to discuss with the people, to talk the things over. She made very unusual pieces of theater. In a sense, it's also an exhibition. It was, certainly, because she had very much attention to form and everything, and inviting different type of artists. And you gave me the idea yourself, because you said you're open till 12. I mean, it's like a performance, what you were doing. You don't have a collection. You're inviting people like actors. So, do you see, is this, I was wondering whether you had this type of presentation in mind, or it just developed. I mean, because this is an interesting development. If you would have the idea of presenting art in such a way, this would be a new experience for this new century.
We had this this specific example in mind, but just listening to you, I often say that one of my mentors thing when I was younger, when I was 18 and I did my first trip to London hitchhiking, the first place I ended up was the Riverside Studios, and I met there at that time UNESCO and Sarot were playing, you know, as himself on stage. And afterwards, they had a drink in a bar, which was really like everybody was hanging out in London afterwards. And I met them very simply there, together with Gilbert and George, Barry Flanagan, and a few other people there. They didn't play any social games. They were simple after finishing their play. And for me, the whole idea of art was like this. You know, I found when I was there, that was exactly what I was looking for, exactly this, that we were all effectively performing something together. Everybody was actors. We don't know who are the extras, who are the actors, but everybody's part of something, of course. But it's at the same time very pretentious to say that, because you can be you can produce a pure failure as well with this, or you can... It depends where you bring the people to where, you know, what is the final goal of this play? Is there any rules? Is there any end? Is there any... we were thinking, when we started, of course, to have this very, very French way, very metaphoric, like a Godard, the film, a film with a scenario with no start, no end, but something which is going, where you can take at any part at any time. Something like this, much more like maybe a soap opera somehow, as well, where you would never find that you would have lost something, but each time you would discover something or would be part of something, and you would reject or love or bore. You would always have something to say about, but never to be just like, oh, okay, it's nothing. So, yeah, creating a dialogue, debate.
May I thank everybody very much, especially Jérôme Sans and Nina Fokusma and Maria Lavoyal for putting their questions and giving a very interesting talk. I'm sure that everybody wants to meet you now. We're having drinks at the bar. If you want to follow this series, please come next Tuesday for Lynn Cook, who will be presenting here her work. And don't forget that this Friday we have an opening of the exhibition Haunted by Detail by the students of the curatorial training program. Their show is opening at 6 this Friday. And the next day, on Saturday, there will be a performance at 3 and a lecture talk, more a talk than a lecture, an hour after the performance at 4. And you're welcome on all those occasions. Thanks.